Hello and welcome to Off the Books, where we surf the uncharted waters of accounting, finance, risk, and wherever else the waves take us. This episode is brought to you by Workiva, the one platform that unites the financial reporting, ESG, audit, and risk teams you love, just like chocolate and peanut butter in a fancy little cup. My name is Steve Soder, accounting enthusiast and Diet Coke aficionado. I'm looking forward to debiting a great conversation, and I'm so happy to have you with us. I am, as always, so happy also to have Catherine Tsai joining us. Catherine, can you please tell everyone about yourself?
I'm not an accountant or Diet Coke aficionado, but I like to drink venti soy chais. I like to ask questions of smart people, and I'm excited to hear the questions that we all asked smart people at the New York Stock Exchange.
Yeah, that's right, Catherine. We are continuing our series that we recorded in front of the New York Stock Exchange as part of Workiva's celebration of 10 years since going public. And today's guest is no stranger to longtime Off the Books listeners, Jonathan Gregory.
Jonathan is the North American controller for the Hershey Company, and in the past, he has joined us to talk about his journey to become a controller. He also does ESG accounting, some M&A work. He's talked to us about the SEC climate disclosure rule. He's talked with us about a lot of different topics.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And this week is no different. So he is going to talk to us about his advice for leaders in the finance space, the intricacies of financial transformation, and the best places not to hang out in New York. So with that, let's get to our chat with Jonathan.
Thank you for having me. I mean, it's Workiva's 10-year anniversary of being public. I've been a customer probably about 9 out of those 10 years. So it's a pleasure to be invited and happy to be here.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. We've got a ton of things that we wanted to ask you about. And one of the conversations that we've been having with some of our other guests is really about leadership in kind of what's pretty volatile, fast-moving, I'd say, landscape over the last 2 to 3 years. You yourself have been a leader, and I know you follow other influential leaders as well. How do you think about leadership in this environment? What are some of the qualities and characteristics that you need to be a successful leader?
Well, I would say first and foremost, you got to be a good listener. If you want to be a leader, you have to be able to know the difference between mentoring and coaching. So, you know, with me and my teams, I really try to do that differentiation as we're working through whether it's a specific problem or something at hand versus maybe just more broadly, like how could I be a good leader to the next generation of leaders and how could I lead? So listening is by far a very underrated skill in today's workplace. So just taking the time to, you know, get to know the individuals that you're leading and do what you have to do to try to develop high talent teams, essentially.
How do you cultivate those teams once you have them?
It's just always being able to jump into the details and help them out. You're not just letting them run on their own. You're there for guidance and support. And some of this may sound super fundamental, but it really does go a long way from the beginning of being able to roll up your sleeves as a leader and help them through their journeys, but then also don't forget to stop and say thank you and do little acts of appreciation so that, you know, they feel that their contributions were part of a bigger thing and, you know, they could see the bigger picture as they go through their career or their particular roles.
Listeners of the podcast will know you've been on the show before and you've talked about how you've advanced in your career. I'm wondering, do you have advice for other people about maybe what you're looking for in somebody that you would like to promote?
Yeah. Favorite question by far. The simple answer is always raise your hand. If there's a new task, new projects coming up, you know, don't be afraid to get outside your comfort zone. You know, that's what I've did throughout my career, whether I was in public accounting or, outside of public accounting in the business field. Always raising your hand and saying, hey, I'd like to learn about XYZ and kind of taking on new challenges.
That's been something that you have, I mean, not only been willing to do, but you've excelled at. I mean, the job that you've had, whether it's, you know, ESG, M&A, I mean, a handful of things. I mean, you've really been like right in the middle, I think, some pretty pivotal things. Certainly the Hershey Company, but I would assume throughout your entire career. Can you give us some examples that might be helpful for younger listeners?
Yeah, I'm all about creating your own job description. Just because you're in a particular role doesn't mean you need to stay within your swim lane. Don't be afraid to get out there. Work cross-functionally with other teams, whether they're within your, you know, broader finance or accounting area. But if it's outside of accounting, some of the people that I work with the most are in legal or, Steve, as you mentioned, the sustainability and ESG teams. So it's getting out and learning about what other roles within the organization are actually doing, how you could help be make critical business decisions and not just be a standard accountant or auditor. So it's really getting out of your comfort zone and always raising your hands. Some good examples are, I've done it earlier in my career when I was at smaller publicly traded companies, but my time in Hershey has really been the catapult in terms of the type of work that I was doing on the M&A front. So, I've been with Hershey for about 8.5 years, and, I've done some pretty exciting acquisitions from Skinny Pop, Pirate's Booty, Dots Pretzels, and all of those have kind of happened over, call it like the last 6 or 7 years. And it was just really the willingness of saying, hey, like, I'd like to work on this project. At the time, I was not leading the department that, the individual really led the effort. She has since retired, and then I took over, and then I was the main cross-functional accounting person. And I was working cross-functionally with people in legal, supply chain, tax as well, and, human resources all across the board. But going through those efforts, doing the M&A work, I get a lot of people that come to me within the organization asking specific questions on hypotheticals, and then you almost become the subject matter expert in business combinations or asset acquisitions. So that's just one prime example of, hey, this was a really interesting area.
Yeah, well, as a non-accountant in the group, I can think of a few challenges on the horizon that maybe people could raise their hands on. But for you, what would some of those challenges be? Just looking at what the SEC has taken on, there's, the cybersecurity rule. There's potentially another human capital rule coming out. And then...
No, you're exactly right.
And it's not like Hershey's has been, passive when it comes to preparing for some of these things. I mean, that type of reporting has actually been critical for Hershey's for a long time.
Cybersecurity is a great example of... that was a rule, to your point, that came out from the SEC. And inherently, some of that work is going to fall on a controllership group or an external reporting group. And it's going to force people to work outside of their comfort zone and work cross-functionally. I did not have a tremendous amount of interaction with our IS team internally at Hershey until this rule came out, or at least the proposal had come out last year. And so it was a lot of understanding what their process is today. How do we embed ourselves in the process? How do we make sure that we're compliant? There's a whole laundry list of things that went through on the cybersecurity, but that is certainly top of mind. And now it is fully incorporated in our controllership function and in a partnership. We have a subcommittee of our disclosure committee that meets just with our cyber experts within the company, and then it reports up any issues. So it's just new things like that. Like, how could we embed ourselves in the process? And then I think I would be remiss if I didn't mention anything about sustainability and ESG. But to your point, Steve, this is something that Hershey has been doing and reporting on for over 10 years. And it's obviously evolved over time. But, just, again, working cross-functionally, helping educate the folks who are more of an environmental background and, doing the actual strategy when it comes to sustainability in the organization. And it's allows them to learn from us. What does it mean to have support, reliable work papers that can be audited if you were going to have a limited assurance audit? So there's a lot of things that, again, I want to say just within the CAO or controllership organization, some of these things fall right into place. But it has been a lot of work over the years to try to make sure that we have the right resourcing and the right education for not only our team, but again, the teams that we're working with all the time.
Well, you mentioned a little bit about integration. Maybe let's move into something that's a little more focused on technology. We hear the term finance transformation used a lot. I mean, it's ubiquitous, and I'm not 100% sure that anybody really knows exactly what that means, which brings me to the question, how would you define finance transformation, not just for your team, but maybe how the Hershey Company thinks about it?
Yeah, and I think it's probably easy for me to answer it right now because we just recently went through our ERP upgrade. It was a multi-year ERP upgrade, and we did it in tranches. We did it based on business unit, country, and most recently, just 2 months ago, we did the U.S. and the rest of the world. So this was like 80% of the business. And while the ERP upgrade wasn't a transformation in and of itself, there were things happening behind the scenes where, it's all about reviewing and understanding all the processes in place and how that may change if you have a new system coming into play. So it was taking the time to basically get rid of non-value-add work and redundancies and making sure that, you know, you're replacing it with value-add work. In general, the ability to, like, take away some manual processes, manual work, and substitute it with more value-add work, that's how I see transformation. And I'm using a very big example right now with the ERP upgrade, but even little things too. You could have your own individual departments, and you just, if you have the time, reviewing your processes front to back, maybe getting another set of eyes in there if somebody's willing to do so, or if they want to work outside their comfort zone, and just getting that fresh take. There's always room for improvement. And now we're kind of in this mentality at Hershey where we're quote unquote always transforming, or always, you know, looking for continuous improvement. So these are going to come in probably much smaller waves now. And, you know, now that the ERP upgrade's behind us, but that's how I would define it. But I'm sure if you asked 10 different companies, you would probably get 10 different answers depending on the circumstances.
And the definition has probably changed over time too, I would think.
I would think so as well. Again, I'm talking about an ERP upgrade, and that was, you know, tangentially related to transformation at every single element in the company, whether it was supply chain or supply chain finance, how they do planning, accounting, and just in general. So it could be very big, or it could be the smallest examples as well.
Are you relying on desktop tools and shared drives? Stuck in a vicious, never-ending cycle of back-and-forth emails? Wish you had more time to proactively manage risk? Stop wasting valuable time corralling colleagues and updating status reports, and start spending more time on what matters with Workiva. Create alignment across key stakeholders. Yes, all of them. With centralized collaboration. Drive better business decisions with insights on demand, and spend more time on value-added work by automating all those awful, repetitive tasks. Plus, connect your GRC processes with your ESG and financial reporting all in the same platform. Seriously. See why audit and risk teams love Workiva at workiva.com/risk. That's workiva.com/risk.
But when you have multiple finance transformation projects, but then also other digital transformation projects across your company that maybe don't touch accounting and finance, how do you make the case for investing in technology to make those projects happen?
Also a great question. And maybe we're seeing this live right now within our company, but we actually have a transformation office. And so these initiatives, or what I'll call business cases, are submitted to the transformation office, and then, you know, they're reviewed with the proper people. There's a team of individuals. I'm one of those individuals from, you know, the accounting aspect to make sure that we're doing things in the proper way possible. So, you know, best practice, I would say, stand up some sort of, we call it a transformation office, but a PMO, or like a program management office, and help facilitate some of those initiatives, especially if they're going to be over a longer period of time, or, you know, they're small but mighty type of things. Yeah, I think that might be a good best practice.
Well, I love the concept of the PMO, and I would say that for any of our listeners who maybe don't have that at their organization, that might be a terrific way for them to raise their hand, right? And say, hey, this is something that I, you know, like to spearhead, like to be a part of, or at least support if maybe that person doesn't have, you know, enough seniority to sort of like take that on their own. Jonathan, you've been a guest on this podcast before, and so we've got maybe some rapid-fire questions that I think hint on some topics that you've talked about before. The first is, when do you know that it's time to leave public accounting and move on into industry on the client side?
I'm the wrong person to ask this question to.
but you left, so you had a reason.
I did, but let me tell the story. So this is taking me back quite some time, but so I think everybody knows I was an Ernst & Young guy. Everybody has an allegiance to their own, you know, various big four, you know, non-big four accounting firm. But I actually left. I wasn't ready to leave.
They kicked you out?
They did not kick me out. That is also an option. That is also an option, but that did not happen to me, thankfully. No, what happened is the people I worked with at EY were fantastic. And I, you know, develop these great relationships. And it turned out that one of the guys that I worked with on a lot of different engagements left the company. He went to go work for a very small publicly traded company, and he was doing external reporting. And then after like 2 years, he got promoted to controller. And all he did was call me up and say, hey, man, you want my old job? You'll report to me. And it was, again, it's not that I was looking. It's not that I was ready. But it was just one of those things where I was like, yeah, you know, like I remember the times when we used to work on all those various engagements and, you know, he was a great manager and everything. And again, it goes back to coaching versus mentorship. I felt like I was being mentored as opposed to coached early in my career by this guy. And so, yeah, it was just a great relationship. And that was my first leap, say it as if I've done it multiple times, but it was my leap out of public accounting into an industry job. Again, I am not the right person to ask. I was not ready to go, but I would say that I think what a lot of people say is, you know, they're just looking for like work-life balance.
What I like about your story, Jonathan, though, is like necessarily feeling ready isn't, because I think anytime it comes to big change, you might never feel ready, right? And so it's just like, if an opportunity presents itself, don't be like, can I do this? Like look for those open doors.
Exactly.
Well, if you take leap number two, you'll find yourself hosting a podcast in front of the New York Stock Exchange, not having done a QRK for years.
I love that leap for me. I love that leap.
Okay, are you ready for your next lightning round question?
Yes, rapid fire.
At what point of the year do you abandon your budget?
Oh, like January. And we're a calendar year.
The truth comes out.
No, we do. Actually, I was on the train here getting emails about our forecasts and our most recent forecasts that the teams are working on. So yeah, it's May and we're working on things for Q2, but it's pretty much by Q1, we're already reforecasting. And I would say it's not totally blown. It's just that obviously circumstances change. You see what we refer to as like R&O, as risks and opportunities. And some things are called out as a risk and an opportunity, and they don't make it into a forecast until it's a little bit better known. So as we go through that process, I swear, like as soon as the board approves the plan, the annual plan, the budget, whatever you want to call it, we're pretty much already reforecasting.
Well, and you know, then you get to halfway through the year and you're still like doing a variance back to the budgets. Like, why are we doing this again? This has no value for anybody.
You know what though, Steve, sometimes like what I've found, and again, I'm not in the FP&A side, but I'm close enough to it that, you know, sometimes I have to speak on it internally. And it's like, you know, some of it ends up being timing and you might find yourself in the middle of the year right back on track with plan. So it just depends on what's happening in the business or the external factors, or, you know, there's always changes with customers, but very early in the year is the short answer that we're already reforecasting.
Well, last rapid fire question. You talked earlier about M&A. Mm-hmm. What would you say is the best part about being involved in merger and acquisition or transaction work?
I would say that I'm a sick and twisted individual, Steve. So I think the easy answer is purchase accounting. I love seeing that from closing the target's books and having their closing balance sheet to it becoming our opening balance sheet, with obviously some differences mixed in there as well. Going through the evaluation process for intangibles, calculating goodwill. I love all of that. All of the support that we have from A to Z on the M&A process. I mean, I love putting that together. It obviously goes to our external auditors who love to beat it up. But you know what? Like some of the things that I wasn't taught in college about valuation, I've learned on the job, and it all comes back to accounting and getting the accounting right on day one. And then it obviously becomes a footnote. So you're always seeing your work like right in the financial statements in a 10Q or a 10K. So I'm always very proud of getting those things to the finish line, and more importantly, getting the auditors to the finish line on the purchase accounting. But I told you, Steve, I'm a sick and twisted individual. So,
well, but those are things that are designed and intended to unlock some value, right? When you have that kind of transaction, and frankly, being right in the middle of it, not just the reporting side, but the integration side, I mean, that's a pivotal part, right, of when somebody identifies that opportunity. That's how it, you know, comes to fruition.
And some would argue that going through the due diligence process is more important than getting, you know, day one accounting right. And while I totally agree with that, it's, you have to have the accounting right. Like, you can't have a bad starting off point. But, you know, due diligence is also a super exciting time. I mean, I like to call it an audit on steroids, basically.
because you're getting the yellow flags, you're getting the red flags. What do we need to watch out for? How is this going to be accounted for? So you're kind of getting the information. I start to get antsy. I'm like, can we just sign this thing and move on to the valuation part? Like, let's get day one kicked off. But those are the types of things that I look for. And I think some individuals on my team have seen that over the years of we've been acquiring more and more, outside companies. And again, they're just raising their hand because they want to be part of the process. I guess I make it look exciting too. I just walk around the office and I'm like, all right, valuation. I'm the valuation guy. So
it's got to be something new every day.
And the other thing is every single acquisition, the way it's structured in the contract, what's included, what's excluded, it's always different. Do we integrate on day one or do we take our time and integrate? So it's always interesting to see like what the rationale is, what management, like senior management, how they're viewing it. And obviously then when the board of directors and, you know, our subcommittees of the board of directors, you know, what their thoughts are on it too. It's just a very exciting, I think a lot of people get, starry eyed when it comes to M&A work. So I always promote it. I do love it though.
Are you working on any M&A deals right now?
Like he could tell.
I had to ask. I was trying to get inside information for you all.
Yeah, no, pass.
I think it's probably time to wrap up because in honor, Jonathan, you've been on a few times, you know, we do closing questions in honor of being in New York. Where do you think the best restaurant is? Or is there like, you got to get a real New York slice?
I don't know all the scenes. I would just say not in Times Square. A lot of tourists, right? Like you got to go on the back streets and probably a couple miles away, but I don't know. Maybe I'll venture out tonight and I'll let you know. I'll be a guest next time and I'll let
nice.
You know.
I love it.
There
we
you go.
Expect
Perfect.
That.
Perfect. Well, Jonathan Greger from the Hershey Company, again, thank you so much for spending some time with us here in front of the New York Stock Exchange to celebrate Workiva's 10 years as a public company. Again, thank you for joining us on Off the Books.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you again to Jonathan Gregory. And thank you, dear listener, for surfing along with us. I'm Catherine Tsai. You heard Steve Soder and Mike Gravano. And this has been Off the Books presented by Workiva. We'll be back next week in front of the New York Stock Exchange talking to Chris Pettit, the Vice President of External Reporting at Keurig Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, that's right. And please subscribe, leave a review, and tell your buddies if you like the show. Now, if you are watching this on YouTube, please leave us a note in the comments. We'd love to hear from you. Or feel free to drop us a line at offthebooks@workiva.com. Surf's up, and we'll see you on the next wave.